It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
We've been chatting with Cecil and Wes now for the past few weeks on the issue of wills and estate planning, and we had some very interesting conversations, as a matter of fact, one or two calls on the subject, and I think this is an important issue, Wes, because one of the things that really kind of hit me last week when we were talking about this has to do with a lot of young families, a lot of people who are young say, well, gee, I really don't need a will because I don't have a lot in the way of assets.
Right.
With one exception.
Right, right.
If you've got children, and I know that this is part of the discussion today, because if you don't have a will and you have a situation where mother and father die in an accident or something happens to them, you now have an asset that living, breathing asset.
Sure.
And so this is something that people need to be aware of.
Yeah, people, you know, sometimes, as we spoke about last week, don't realize that, you know, in the event the mother and father, you know, pass away and there's a minor child, that the court is kind of left to make the determination as to who that guardian is going to be. And you would certainly rather have that determination made in your will as opposed to, you know, by someone who doesn't know you, doesn't know your family. It kind of can create some turmoil within the family as far as competing parents or grandparents or whomever comes forward to you know, try to serve in that role
right.
as the guardian. So that's very important. Another thing that we brought up last week with regard to that was, you know, we do get that question a lot or that issue where, you know, younger folks say, well, I don't have much of anything right now. Why do I need a will? Well, you know, if you thought ahead and done a little planning, then there's probably going to be some life insurance mm-hmm. in place, and you might even have some through your employment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're military, there might be some life insurance in place or some death benefits. So obviously it's important to plan from a perspective of having a trust for those minors as well. So we did talk about those issues some last week, but what we want to move on to today, Lockwood, is we want to talk a little bit about what happens in general if you don't have a will at all. Where do your assets pass? Who serves as the administrator of the estate? Again, back to the issue of who is the guardian of the minor children, those type issues. Now, I have to tell you that this topic can get a little bit boring. I'm going to try to make it just as light as possible.
Well,
okay.
You know, I appreciate that, but in addition to boring, but both of us having children and I having grandchildren, you're not quite old enough. You need to work on that. This is a big issue. And I just say this, that there are folks out there who have wills and are pretty comfortable on,
right.
But they may have children.
Right.
They may even have grandchildren
right.
that might be in that stage in life where it would be worth their while to say, look, just go
take
ahead,
a look.
Take
and,
a will. Right. Rudimentary. Just get
right.
a rudimentary will. Get it started.
Right, right. And take a look and make sure that everything is right.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't have any unintended consequences in the event of a tragedy.
Right.
So, all right. So if we die without a will, then our estate passes through intestate succession. All right. That is a statutory scheme with regard to how your assets pass in the event that you die and you don't have a will.
Intestate succession.
That's right. That's in the North Carolina General Statutes. So I guess probably the best place to start would be, you know, when we, you know, pass away, someone has to qualify as the personal representative of the estate
mm-hmm.
to do all the stuff, to gather all the assets and make sure the property goes to the right place, whether it be real property or personal property, to make sure that the bills get paid, to make sure that the orderly administration of the estate takes place. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's not a free for all. That's a designated person who has the authority vested in them by court order, to serve in that role. Now, in the event that we have a will, then the will is going to state, you know,
right.
who the preference is with regard to who that personal representative or executor would be.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you know, a good will is going to have an order, this person first, if this person has deceased, then this person, if
right.
this person has deceased or cannot act, then this person, so on and so forth. So it's pretty easy job for the clerk of court, you know, when we have a will, to make that determination. And it can be easy if we don't have a will and there's an application for an administrator of the estate to be appointed. However, there could sometimes be conflict there. There could be multiple parties coming forward to try to serve in that role. Sometimes we see that there are some ulterior motives involved there, where maybe a certain party wants to get control of the assets of the estate, maybe with some personal interest in mind, depending on their circumstances. But nevertheless, the clerk is really the judge of probate, who has to make the determination as to who is going to serve.
When you say the clerk, meaning the clerk of court?
Clerk of court, yep. And usually, as it relates to the appointment of the administrator of an estate, that decision is made by the clerk of court, but we have a specific, and most jurisdictions do have a specific assistant clerk who serves just in estates. So normally that decision is made by the assistant clerk of court with oversight from the actual clerk of superior court. Yeah, so there's that office is a very important office. No Wow. question about that. I mean, you can see here, you know, as far as appointment of the administrator of the estate, clerk makes that decision. And we'll get to, you know, the issue of appointment of guardian in a minute. Clerk makes that decision. So very important decision making with regard to these issues. But the clerk does have some rules.
Okay.
You know, the clerk just doesn't have, you know, carte blanche discretion to make any decision they want to with regard to who the administrator will be. So those rules basically are set forth in North Carolina General Statute 28A-4-1.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Try to keep it light here, but, okay. You know, we've got to follow the law. So, again, if we have a will, then the will is going to indicate who the personal representative is. If we don't, then we revert back to this statute, and it gives an order of preference. And basically, number one on the list is a surviving spouse.
Right.
Okay, so if you're married at the time of your death, then the surviving spouse is going to be a number one on the list. Now, this doesn't matter if you've been separated for 20 years and never got divorced.
Ooh.
You're the surviving spouse.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's an issue to take into consideration. Sometimes we have, you know, situations where, you know, an individual passes away, the surviving spouse that maybe is estranged
right.
from the rest of the family.
I'm thinking that.
Is
yeah.
the one who comes forward and serves as administrator.
They have priority.
They have priority. And not only do they do that, they have priority. They get the bulk of the estate too, because there was no will. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So number one would be surviving spouse. Next would be anyone who is a devisee of the person who died. Basically, anyone who is going to retake any part of the estate under the Intestate Succession
okay.
Act. All right, and we'll go over that, you know, in a minute if we have time to get to it today. Any devisee or any heir, next of kin. And so basically we're looking at family first.
Okay.
We're looking at spouse and then other people who would take as a family member. And then even a creditor could come forward if no one else comes forward. Okay. And the way that works basically is that, you know, if a creditor is owed money or owed something, owed an asset from this individual who passed away, well, the proper way for that creditor to come forward and make a claim against this person is to file a claim against the estate. Well, if the estate never gets opened, then he can't properly file that claim.
Right.
So he can then come forward, or she can then come forward, or the company, and petition to be the administrator of the estate just to get the ball rolling so the administration can take place, and so that proper claim can be made. So we do get to that point sometimes.
That's interesting. I've never even considered that. But
right.
So, all right.
Right. Next, we have a person of good character residing in the county who applies therefor. Okay, so basically we get to a lot of discretion there. Okay, but we've got to go all the way through the family first.
All right.
You know, and then we get to a person
of good
character.
So somebody simply steps in and says, I will be happy to serve as executor of the
right.
estate.
Administrator
of the estate.
Right.
Wow.
That's right. And then any other person of good character not disqualified under 28A-4-2. So, all right. So that's our list of priority with regard to who will be the administrator of the estate. And that's pretty logical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's start with the spouse, start with the family members,
Right.
Then creditor, we give you that right because we know you have some legal rights you want to advance against this estate. And then if no one comes forward under that description, then we get to what people of good character that the clerk thinks is okay.
Okay.
Thinks would be okay. All right. So that all makes sense. Now, however, there are certain individuals who would not be qualified at all. Okay. You have to be at least 18.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. If you have been adjudged incompetent and remain incompetent, then you cannot serve as an administrator. So that's an actual adjudication of incompetency in a court of law, and that has not been revived. Your competency has not been restored to
gotcha.
You. Okay, that makes sense. A convicted felon.
All right. I was wondering about that one.
A non-resident of the state of North Carolina who has not appointed a resident process agent.
Okay.
And that's a simple thing to do.
Right.
You know, usually you appoint maybe your attorney
mm-hmm.
to serve your local North Carolina, or even Carteret County, Craven, Pamlico County, whatever county, attorney to serve as the administrator or serve as the personal, or the process agent for
mm-hmm.
you. Or if you're illiterate, you can't serve.
Really?
Yeah. And anyone else that the clerk finds unsuitable.
Illiterate cannot.
That's true. Yes.
All right. We're talking with Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, the right advice at the right time. Literacy. So you've got to be literate in order to serve as an administrator.
Yeah, that's in the statute.
Wow.
I mean, obviously we don't deal with that very often, but if it comes up, it is basically a reason why someone cannot serve. It's a complicated job that has to be done.
All right, the right advice at the right time with Wes Collins here this morning here on Coastal Daybreak. All right, we're talking with Wes Collins here of Harvell and Collins. We're talking about wills and estate, and it caught my attention the fact that you've got to be literate in order to be an administrator of an estate.
Right. Well, it's not an easy task.
Well, I understand.
You know, there's documents that have to be read, account statements, you know, communicating with people with regard to how to handle, you know, bank accounts, deal with real estate transactions, the car, the boat, you know, whatever else there is. So, you know, it's not a simple job for someone who is very much literate. So it would be impossible for someone who's literate, I would say.
All right.
So basically we've talked about what happens with regard to the appointment of the administrator.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, gosh, we see this situation pretty often where someone dies, you know, without a will. And then there's almost like a rush to the courthouse kind of thing. And there's potentially conflict among family members, and we're very concerned, and the families are very concerned about, you know, who is going to be in control of this particular estate. Because, you know, maybe there's some lack of trust issues. You know, we see that quite often. But if you have a will, we know who that person is going to be, you know. And, you know, the clerk of court is, in most cases, you're going to be appointing a surviving spouse. I mean, obviously, if that surviving spouse is available, then that's the person who is going to be appointed.
So the clerk goes through a series of steps if there is no declared will and no declared administrator.
That's right.
Executor.
That's
okay.
Right.
All right.
So that's the administrator of the estate. Then we get to the guardianship issue if they're minor children.
Mm-hmm.
Same type situation. We're looking at family members first. There could be multiple applicants.
What if the family members say that we're not interested?
Well, then we potentially are looking at the Department of Social Services. We're potentially looking at the public guardian with regard to the guardian of the estate, any
mm-hmm.
assets that the individual minor would be entitled to just to manage those assets. So there are resources that we look to in that situation, but as you would imagine, in most cases, you know, if we have a minor whose parents have suddenly passed away, I mean, they're going to be family members or at least friends that come forward to
mm-hmm.
support. I mean, 99.9% of the time, that is the case. And more often than not having someone to step forward, we have too many people to step forward, and then the potential conflict among, you know, those individuals. and basically a trial over who is going to serve in the best interest of the particular child. Now, you know, if we have an appointment in the will as to who the guardian is to be, then we, you know, we break that tie. We're done. We don't have that conflict.
You said a trial.
Mm-hmm.
Are there situations where suddenly you have to have a, I'll use the word trial, over the, let's say, who's going to be responsible for the
right.
minor
the,
children?
The clerk of court is going to want to hear evidence with regard to these people.
Is the clerk the judge in this case?
Yes. The clerk is going to want to hear about,
This is important.
Okay.
So the clerk is the one who makes that decision?
That's right. It's subject to appeal. It can be appealed up to superior court, but it starts with original jurisdiction at the clerk of court level.
Okay? I don't think a lot of people realize the role that the clerk plays.
It's a very important role. Very important role.
Okay.
So, yes, there could very much be a trial. This is going to be more of a bench trial type situation, not a jury. Mm-hmm. The judge is making the determination. But the clerk, as you would hope and as you would imagine, the clerk is going to want to hear evidence. He's going to want to hear, you know, where do these applicants live? What do they do for a living? Do they have a comfortable place, home for this child to live? What are their ideas with regard to, you know, the school that the child is going to go to and the church and the medical providers and, you know, all these kind of things? So it's somewhat of a subjective analysis here, you know, by the clerk. So the clerk is going to have to hear, you know, facts and evidence to make that determination. So yes, we could lead up to a trial in that particular situation. All right. So now we've dealt with the appointment of the administrator and we've dealt with the guardian.
Right.
We don't have a will. So the court has had to make those determinations under our statutes. Then we have to deal with assets. Now, how do they pass? And that is under intestate succession. And we probably are going to have to pour over in the next week on this, but we'll get started with it, at any rate. So we deal with the real property first in the statute, and basically it deals with the surviving spouse first.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about what the surviving spouse receives first, and then we deal with the other family members after that. All right. So, surviving spouse, interestingly, is if you're married, it's your surviving spouse. It doesn't matter, as I said before, if you've been estranged for years. If the divorce decree has not hit the courthouse or has not been entered at the time of the date of death, then the surviving spouse takes the majority of the estate. That's just the way it works. And we see that sometimes where, you know, the surviving spouse has not spoken with the decedent for years.
Right.
But he or she certainly shows up when it's time to collect.
And unfortunately, the children, they're second?
They're second, yeah.
All right. You're listening to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We've got Wes Collins here in the studio. I'll just remind you, we have not had any phone calls. If you're welcome to call in, we've got a few moments left. 800-818-2255, or you can call them at their offices, 726-9050. That's 726-9050, Harvell and Collins. We'll wrap things up here in just a moment. Wrapping things up here this morning with Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And you said a moment ago, Wes, we're probably going to have to continue this on to the next program. But we're talking about, an intestate succession.
That's right. Dying without a will. How does your estate pass? Again, we've talked about what the court does in order to appoint the administrator of the estate. We've talked about what the court does in order to appoint a guardian of any minor child.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're up to the point of dealing with the assets. And this gets a little bit convoluted. Again, I'll try to keep it just as light as possible. But we deal with the surviving spouse first. So let's assume that there is a surviving spouse and talk about the way that the assets would pass in the event that there was a surviving spouse first and then you know, deal with other family members. But if the decedent, the person who passed away, is survived by one child, just one child, or any lineal descendant of one child, okay,
mm-hmm.
that means that, you know, a grandchild,
right.
basically, then the surviving spouse then takes one half of the real estate.
Wow.
Okay. One half of the real estate.
This formula has already been created. This is a state.
That's the way it goes.
Okay.
All right. One half of the real estate. We deal with real estate first and then deal with personal property next.
All right.
Obviously, real estate is our primary, so dirt.
Yeah.
And then our personal property would be, you know, money, but it could also be
car,
vehicles,
right.
boats, mm-hmm. you know, jewelry,
right.
whatever, those kind of things. So, next we deal with there being a surviving spouse and two kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are two children, and these are children of the person who passed.
Right.
Then the surviving spouse takes 1/3 of the real estate.
Okay.
Okay. Moving our way down. Now, and basically if they're, it, that one applies if there's two children or more.
Okay.
All right. So it doesn't matter if there's 10
so
children.
Five children,
or,
and, right, it's, and then she right, get, the, right. The spouse, I say she or he, gets a third. The family members get the other third divided among the
that's
five,
basically
six,
the
or
way
ten
it works.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So next, if there is not a child that survives the person who passed away, but the person who passed away is survived by one or more parents, then the surviving spouse takes 1/2 of the real property. So we're bringing the parents into the fold now.
But in that case, the spouse gets 1/2, no matter how many surviving parents and what have you.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Real quickly. As we
and one more. All right. And then we'll move on to next week. All right. And then in the event that there's no child and no parent, then the spouse gets what?
100.
All of it.
100%.
All whether, of the real with, estate.
Whether they're estranged or otherwise.
Whether they were separated 20 years ago or not.
The right advice at the right time, Harbell and Collins.